This is Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Josh Rawlerson, in for Paul Guggenheimer. On Wednesday, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette announced that it will begin charging a $10 monthly access fee to users of its digital content. And that applies to desktop, mobile, and electronic editions of the paper. The PG joins a growing number of daily papers, both large and small, that have put their content behind paywalls or pay meters, including the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and most recently the Washington Post. And while controversial among readers, the strategy seems to be working out pretty well for larger papers, at least from a business standpoint. They've seen increases in both online traffic and advertising revenues. But for smaller regional papers like the Post-Gazette, it's not at all clear what the future holds. And in a city like Pittsburgh, which is one of only a few left in the country with two competing daily papers, it's even more difficult to predict how the market will respond. Post-Gazette President Joe Pepe says in a statement this week that the decision grows, quote, grows out of our fundamental belief that our customers recognize the value in our local news products. That's the bet they're making. We extended an invitation to the paper's management to participate in this discussion. They were unable to join us today. However, we're very pleased to have with us in the studio media scholar Steve Halleck. He's director of the School of Communication and associate professor of journalism at Point Park University. Steve, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having me.
And we're happy to take your calls at 412-246-2002 and your emails at esspgh@wesa.fm. You can follow the conversation on Twitter at ESSPGH and on the hashtag EPLive. Phone number again is 412-246-2002. Steve, we've been seeing more and more daily newspapers take this step, and many more are expected to follow. Why are so many papers switching to paid content models?
Well, Josh, this is an easy question, actually. The answer is the obvious one, money. Mm-hmm. The folks in the industry call this, they've been trying to figure out for years how to, what they call, monetize their internet content. But this monetizing isn't just about the money they would make by the hits they would sell for the content. There's a couple other strategies in play here. One is it just doesn't make sense to keep giving away what you're charging subscribers to pay for. That would encourage them to go to the internet and drop your newspaper. So that just is not a smart business model. But another aspect here is, as you mentioned, the advertising. Advertisers are looking at the demographics. If you can show them a paid subscription as opposed to a free subscription, you're going to be able to charge more for your advertising, and you're going to be able to offer them the demographic they seek, which is people with the finances to pay for content, which means they have the finances to buy products. And then I think the third part of the strategy is to drive their subscription. They're charging, as you noted, $10 a month for this. Well, a monthly subscription to the newspaper is $20. If you buy the subscription, you get all the internet content for free.
Right.
So it would make financial sense for a consumer then to subscribe to the paper. The New York Times has discovered that this worked for them.
Right. Well, let's talk about how this is working out for the Times and other larger papers that have taken this road. I'm wondering if there are any test cases in other cities that might shed a little bit more light on how this might work out in Pittsburgh for a paper like the Post-Gazette.
Well, the Post-Gazette actually did their own test. They have a sister paper in Toledo, and they put up a paywall there, I think, about a year ago. So they had a chance to try it out and see how it works. The difference is Toledo is not a competitive newspaper market.
Right.
So the risk here is, by monetizing your internet content, are you going to drive readers to your primary competitor, the Tribune Review? It is working at larger papers. The New York Times just a couple months ago announced that they have finally turned the corner, and they were in trouble. They were laying off staff and, you know, facing the problems that other newspapers are facing. They turned the corner, and for the first time in their history, it was not the advertising that's driving their revenue now. They are primarily driven now by subscriptions and products that they sell. Advertising is no longer their number one revenue producer. Gannett, the organization that owns USA Today and is the largest newspaper chain in the country, recently reported that they made they estimate their revenue at 25%. Their internet content provides about 25% of their revenue from their paywall. So it's working at the bigger papers. The risk here is because it's really kind of a test case here. You're looking at this competitive market. So it's somewhat of a risk, but I don't think a big one.
I mean, would it be correct to assume then that other papers, other media scholars are watching what's going to be happening in Pittsburgh over the next couple of
years? Yes, I know I am. I am. And I have contacts at both newspapers, and I'll be talking to them to see what's the effect of this. You know, some of their reporters or editors from both newspapers teach and work at our university. So I'm constantly in touch with them, and yeah, I'm going to watch it very carefully.
And what do you see as some of the other risks, maybe potential rewards from going this route?
The rewards, I guess, are, I think, for the reader, because when you go to the internet, you have the opportunity to get more and different kinds of content. Mm-hmm. For example, we're teaching our students now to do different platforms besides print together. They need to know how to shoot cameras. They need to know how to do audio. When you go to the internet, that's what you get. You get video, you get audio, and you get breaking news. You know, if there's a hostage situation downtown, it's not just going to be the local broadcast people. You're going to have internet reporters down there from the newspapers covering that, and you can go to the site and stay up to date. So I guess immediacy and just what we call branding, your local news. That's what you offer that people can't get elsewhere on the internet is your local news.
This is Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Josh Rollerson in for Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking with Point Park University journalism professor Steve Halleck about this week's announcement that the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette will begin charging a fee for unlimited access to its online content. You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002 or on Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EPLive. Let's bring in another voice. Sharon Walsh is the editor of our content partner Public Source. She's also worked as an investigative reporter and editor at The Washington Post. We asked her what kinds of changes papers might make in their digital content when they institute paywalls.
I think a lot of this has to do with the expectations of readers. I mean, we've all seen people walking around reading and looking at things on their phones, on their iPads, on their laptop computers, and small kinds of notebooks. So more and more people are reading online. But what they expect online is not just, here's an article of information. They expect great photos. They expect great apps so that it's easy to read online. They expect multimedia of all kinds, including video and audio. And these things are all things that are produced by people who are expert in doing that, and it costs money. It's very time-consuming, and it's very costly to produce that kind of multimedia, whether you're a newspaper, a radio station, a TV station. Those things cost money. So I assume that some of their thinking is that money will go toward that and their bottom line. Now, I know they already produce a lot of multimedia, so again, it's probably just going to go toward their bottom line for what they provide already.
Sharon Walsh with Public Source. Steve Halleck, do you agree with that assessment? Is that going to cut it with readers? Or are they going to demand more from paid content?
No, they're not going to demand more because they're already going to be getting quite a bit more. What they're going to demand, I think, is the same. The newspapers have to produce the same credibility.
Right.
That's what they have to sell. Is their credibility, whereas a lot of bloggers and a lot of independent news organizations don't have what they call a brand. Mm-hmm. So I think the readers they'll demand immediacy, and I think they'll demand, I guess, a more thorough product because the internet just goes on and on and on, so there's no length limit. You're not stopped by the end of the page. So I think they might expect to see more in-depth reporting. I think that's part of the challenge of this new format or this new platform, as we call it, is to offer, I think, more meaningful content to help you claim an audience that maybe your newspaper couldn't claim. And I read a study just recently where one newspaper is using the proceeds from its internet paywalls. They're putting that into their investigative reporting, and they're using that to put more investigative reporting on the internet. I think that's good for journalism. I think it's good for the democracy.
Well, it seems like a big question in when it comes to how readers are going to respond to this is, are they going to perceive it as a stopgap? Is this just a way to make the books balance in the short term, or is it going to get plowed back into, you know, building our product and doing better things with it?
It depends on what readers talk to. I think the average reader is going to say, oh, they're figuring out a way to charge us more money to find out what's going on in our own city.
Uh-huh.
And that is true, but what they're really trying to do is survive.
Right.
Newspapers are in trouble right now. I hope, I pray that this is a way to help them survive, because we need newspapers and good – we need the work that Sharon Walsh is doing too, a public source. We need – and what you're doing. We need all these voices to inform the voters, to inform the public about what their country, what their citizens are doing. And if these voices go away, if these content producers go away, you're not going to have an informed citizenry, and that's vital to democracy.
Let's take a call. Joseph is calling from the South Side. He'd like to comment on expectations for content when you have to open up your wallet and pay for it. Joseph, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, so I just wanted to say that as a young digital reader and print reader, my expectations are that I'm going to be viewing a website that presents me something aesthetically beautiful as well as the content that I want to see. And I think that as a young reader, those are the expectations of all young readers. It's not just we're paying for the content, as was previously mentioned, but it's that we're paying for something that looks good and that we can be proud of, you know, adding to our daily routine of waking up and checking whatever blogs and whatever else we check.
Joseph, I think that's a very good comment, and that is why the New York Times and the Post-Gazette and these other places with their websites, they have full-time designers, just like they have people who design their front pages. Have you looked at the page yet? Have you looked at the front page of their internet site?
Yeah, I have looked at the front page, and it's okay. I just think, you know, there's a lot of work that could be done to it, not only from a design perspective, but from a user experience perspective. And my needs just aren't being met at a place like Post-Gazette, whereas they are being met, you know, by the New York Times website right now and the Wall Street Journal website and even apps that I can get.
So I guess the Post-Gazette editor would ask you, yes, but is the New York Times giving you the stories and information you want about Pittsburgh government and about Pittsburgh sports?
And, you know, my answer to that obviously is no, but I'm not feeling that I need to shell out $10 to get non-exclusive stories yet, depending on the design on the website.
Okay, I think that's a fair comment. I also think that as they continue this monetization experiment that they're trying, I think you're going to see their page designers listening to – they know that the future is you. The young readers is their future. And I think they're going to listen to the sorts of comments you make, and they understand that they're going to have to make it look good. They're going to have to make it easy to navigate, which they're still working on. They're still relative newcomers to this whole game of the internet, but I think they'll get better at it. But, yeah, you're the people they're after. And, you know, when I talk to students at our school – I always ask them, where do you get your news? And you're the one who's going to raise your hand with the rest of them and say, on the internet. And the Post-Gazette, actually, they've come late to the game here, but they've figured that out.
Joseph, thanks for your call. You know, we're talking about the way that readers are responding to this news. You can get a sense of it by scrolling through the comments thread on the article that the Post-Gazette posted. I don't know how representative that is, but people have strong feelings. Is this pretty much expected in situations like this? How do you expect readers to respond to an announcement like this in the short term versus the long term?
Well, how would you respond to learn that something you've been getting free for the last 20 years
right.
is suddenly going to – or the internet, I guess, is what internet content like this is maybe 10, 15 years old. Okay, now you're told all of a sudden, guess what? We're going to start charging you for this. That's why the analyses I've read of these paywalls is that people can't figure out why didn't newspapers do this from the beginning.
Right.
Because now it looks like it is just a money ploy. Okay, we've got these people who want this content. We might as well charge them for it. When I can tell you that's really not what's going on. They need to find a way to survive, or they're going to have to really cut back drastically or go away. But I can understand their reaction. It's not an accurate reflection of what's really going on.
One of the big disruptive forces, obviously, that have put papers in this position has to do with the way that people are reading and sharing news via social media. My understanding is that the restrictions that the Post-Gazette is implementing are not going to apply, or maybe you're not going to be as restrictive in that context. Articles that people get to by way of Facebook and Twitter may not be subject to the same rules. Correct me if I'm wrong. That's
I don't
my
know.
Understanding. But given the momentum that – that given that the momentum all seems to be in the direction of people getting their content that way, does that hold up as a sustainable approach in your mind? Or if you can only lock down the desktop version or your mobile app version of the edition, is that, you know?
If I understand your question, I think if this content is available on those kinds of devices, mm-hmm. I think it's really to the Post-Gazette's and other newspapers' advantage to do that, because people won't have to go find a newspaper box. They can just take out their device.
Right.
And if they're a subscriber, they have constant access to a news platform that theoretically at least is now 24/7 as opposed to just coming out once in the morning. So they could go there to get breaking news. So I would think it would really be to the newspaper organization's advantage for them to have that device available.
As an industry observer, how soon do you anticipate being able to assess and say whether this will have been a success or not?
Tomorrow.
All right.
I think you'll know within a year or two.
Okay.
I mean, it's going to take time. There'll be some pushback. And, you know, I'll be curious to see down the road if the Tribune Review jumps in and does the same thing, or if they're going to wait and see, okay, are the Post-Gazette internet people going to drift over, or are we going to start getting more hits on ours now? This is really a test for this kind of market. And that's why I want a good year or two just to look at it. I think they're ready to go the long run with it.
Well, briefly, I mean, game this out from the Trib's point of view. How do they respond to this? What's the advantage for them?
The Tribune Review is such a unique news organization because they have an owner who's so highly committed to keeping that newspaper, and he has a ring of newspapers around Pittsburgh. The Post-Gazette's surrounded with these suburban papers that belong to the Tribune Review. I think it's just going to be watch and see. If the Post-Gazette subscriptions go up, and their hits don't take a big hit, you know, then they may have to respond. But that organization's interest is more in producing news for the long haul. They're in this for the long haul fight. So I think they'll give it 6 months to a year just to see how this pans out for the Post-Gazette and if they have to find a response. I don't think you'll see – I'll watch them do this tomorrow. But I don't think they'll go to a paywall tomorrow just to respond.
All right. Well, we will all be watching very closely. Steve Halleck will also be watching, I take it. He's Associate Professor of Journalism, Director of the School of Communication at Point Park University. Steve, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, colleges and universities are allocating more and more of their financial aid resources to students with the least financial need, while students from the lowest income brackets are being offered less and less. Reporter Marian Wang covered it for ProPublica and joins us to explain why. That's just ahead on Essential Pittsburgh.